This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The following podcast is hashtag Boone approved. It's time for another edition of the Brett Boone Podcast.
Remember when me and you almost went to blows? Lou sent me down three times too, so I know what you're talking about.
With your host, MLB All-Star, Brett Boone.
Bottom line is, you will become a successful major league hitter by hitting pitchers' mistakes.
As he sits down with his sports and entertainment friends from around the world.
You are not going to be a successful major league hitter if you hit pitchers' pitches.
This isn't just any former jocks podcast.
To change the outcome, you got to change the income. You got to change what goes in. Then that changes what goes out.
Often duplicated, but never replicated. Just like his bat flip.
Okay, now the party starts. The responsibility starts now.
Now in its fourth year, this is the one and only Brett Boone Podcast.
Welcome to the Brett Boone Podcast. I'm Brett Boone. Today on the program, we're catching up with a rock and roll legend. He's managed everyone from Motley Crue to Bon Jovi, Guns N' Roses, Hootie and the Blowfish, and long time has been the manager with the legendary band Kiss. I'm really looking forward to getting a little bit behind the scenes, behind the curtain in the rock and roll world. Good friend of mine. I appreciate you coming on. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Doc McGee. Doc, thanks for coming on the Brett Boone Podcast.
Well, Brett, you know, I've been waiting a long time to be able to get on this podcast.
It's on your bucket list. It's right there with – well, you probably got a few golf courses left.
Yes, of course, of course. So I'm happy to be here, and let's get into it.
Long time. What have you been up to? We haven't talked probably – 6-7 years. What have you been up to? Doc and I were introduced, I think it was through Chuck Finley, a mutual friend of ours, buddy of mine, pitched with my dad. I played against him for years, but how have you been?
I couldn't be happier if I was twins. I'm just really, again, we've been blessed. I mean, with all the artists that we've been able, you know, I've been able to manage over the years. And now, you know, I finished with Kiss. I ended their 50-year career on December 2nd in New York at Madison Square Garden with live pay-per-view, and now we have an Avatar show coming, and there's all kinds of stuff that's coming with Kiss. But it's just been a dream life. I don't know what else to say. It's been I've been married to the same girl for 40 years. Just as happy as can be. I don't know if I could get any happier.
Very cool.
To be honest with you, it's really good.
And you say you ended Kiss. I always hear in your world, in that industry, everybody's always on their farewell tour. That's their last one. I've seen I'm trying to think. Who have I seen?
You've seen everybody.
Oh, I've seen Fleetwood Mac on their final tour like three different times.
Sure. And Cher, and Ozzy, and Elton, and everyone, because nobody really wants to quit.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. It sounds good. You pump the final tour, and then a couple years later, you kind of get the itch. And
yeah, I mean, most of it's listen, you don't want to quit baseball. When you what were you, 30, 32 years old or something like that?
You know? I was 37. And you're right. You're right. Your body just, it's a young man's game. And once you get to a certain age, you just can't do it. You can't get out of bed and do it like you did it. And the kids are too young that are taking your spot.
Yeah. And the whole thing is you don't want somebody to say, God, I remember when I saw Brett play 10 years ago.
Right.
When he was really good. You know what I mean? So not that you're not good, but it's just, it's age, it's elements, it's everything. You can play songs, you can do everything, but Gene and Paul and them, they wear 40, 50 pounds of shit every day. So they're up there and they want to, I've been with them 30 years. And so I've got them to this stage. And now we're moving into the Avatar world and we're moving into Marvel with these guys and four movies and all this kind of stuff. And we'll see what comes up. I know that we're in the middle of doing with Lucasfilms. We're in the middle of doing an Avatar show, hopefully open in 26 in Vegas. So we're moving forward. We have a movie coming. We have documentaries coming. So there's a lot for the guys to do other than tour. Okay. So they did. And that's really the hardest thing for them to do is that we played 287 shows. Okay. In 59 countries on the farewell tour.
That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
So that's a lot of shows, a lot of time away from home, a lot of time from, not that we're old, but at our ages, we have a thing called QTR, quality time remaining. Okay. And what does that mean? That means that we're going to spend time with the people that we neglected to get where we're at today. Right. Not to continue to stand up there to get at, the adulations of 20,000 people screaming for you or people telling me I'm a legend or this. Those are all great things. You've had it, Boomy. You know what it's like, okay? But now we want to spend time with our families and our grandchildren and bring this brand of KISS to another level that we don't have to be there pounding it around the world.
Okay? Yeah, grind it on tour.
And we love it. We love it. And we had the best time. I mean, it was an awesome time. You have no idea how much fun we had out there. And, for a bunch of old guys that went out there, we had probably, I have to say, I had more fun than when I was touring in the 80s. It was a different fun. a lot less dangerous, by the way.
I could imagine. I don't know. Wait a minute, Doc. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no, Boone. You of all people know.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I've had my times. And by the way, for those of you listening to the Boone podcast, Doc has seen me in rare form.
Yes.
You bring up an interesting point when you say there is a time and a place. I was 37 years old. I remember, as a young player, as a player in the middle of my career, watching guys that I came into the league really having a level of admiration for and seeing them in the end and be like, man, I just wanted to go put my arm around them and take them off the field and say, what an unbelievable career. But I don't like to see you like this anymore. We all get to a point where we can't play like we used to play. I see in your world, in that industry, some bands are just built differently and they're still rocking in their 70s, sound great, look great. We're never going to be able to recreate our 20s, but some bands just hang in there a lot longer than others. Then I see bands that when I was a kid I used to watch, and now they're still playing and I'll catch wind of them. I mean, they can't sing, they look terrible. Have you had times throughout your career where you just look at bands that maybe you were really a big fan of and be like, you know what, it's time to take it to the house, and they just don't?
It's, because So you have to understand in our field, and same in yours actually, because we are all in the entertainment business.
Right.
Whether you're in sports or a rock band or whatever, you're in the entertainment business. So as we go out there and perform in the earlier days before, say, 15 years ago, it was what we're doing. We're out there performing. Now with social media, with all the looks and everything that we have and the change of what we're doing, it's completely different. Now they critique you by somebody with an iPhone at your concert that holds it up. It sounds like shit. They only show the part where you look fat or you look, it's like a TMZ mugshot.
Right.
You look like fucking Nick Nolte every time they put it up on Instagram. And then people go, I'm not going to see that.
Right.
Why would I spend my money? So now they find that all of a sudden, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, Journey finds a singer from the Philippines that used to work on Cars that sings like Steve Perry. And it's accepted because people want to hear Steve Perry sing like Steve Perry. Mm-hmm. Okay. And all of a sudden you have Foreigner that has, all these big hits, and there's nobody in Foreigner original. You have Queen, Freddie Mercury, gone. Yeah. So people are accepting the fact that they're listening to these bands that are not original bands. They're like cover bands. Okay. But they serve the purpose because the people really just want to hear the songs that they remember as children, as grown-ups, as they love the connection of what Zeppelin gave them or what the Who gave them or what Kiss gave them. Okay. And now you can recreate it digitally in an unbelievable way to where you look like your 20s.
Right.
You move like your 20s and you can't tell the difference. And so now this is what we're moving into now. But to have the bands out there and flailing around being really not good. See, a lot of bands, they don't have to. All they do is stand on stage in blue jeans and they stand there with a guitar on a microphone and they sing a song. Okay. Well, that isn't what we do. Okay. We blow shit up. Okay, we're everywhere. We've got, we put 20 pounds of shit in a 4-pound bag every night. Okay, we blow it up. So these guys have to be at the top of their game as much as they can be at their ages.
Right.
And they work out now. They work out consistently. They're very regimented. We have meetings every day. They would never have done this in the 80s. They would have never done this in the 70s, okay? They wouldn't have done it in the 90s. But now they knew how important it was, and we have these meetings every day to better the show. Because the Kiss, and all my bands, predominantly Kiss, was the band that said, I want to be the band that I never saw. That's what we want to be. And so that's a big responsibility. So when we can't give you much more than what we have, okay? When we're at the end of our physical being, we're so lucky that we're in this position to take this next digital step into keeping Kiss alive for as long as people will have them, as long as we're interesting, as long as we prove what we do as being one of the best rock bands in the world. With keeping kids excited about it, our demo is 6 to 70. We have probably 10% of the audience is under 14. Okay, we have probably 50% of the audience is under 30, and the other 50% is above it. So we have a really cross. We're Cracker Barrel, okay? We have four generations of people that come and eat at Kiss World every day together.
No, I get it.
So now we can't do this physically anymore, but we can do it digitally. We can go to the next step and make, and these aren't easy. You know, you hear about holographic, you hear about, we're going to do this 3D thing, and then we're going to do the Tupac on this. That's for the novice. Well, where we're going to is what ABBA has done in London, what we're doing now with ILM, okay, with Lucasfilms, okay? We're spending around $200 million developing our show. Now, that's a big commitment, okay? So it's not like somebody's taking $5 million and putting together a holograph show, okay? This is really well thought out.
Yeah, this is big time.
This is huge. And it's not easy to get into it. You can't, right. There's not like, oh, you just overspent and you bought shit. No, it's $1 million a minute to produce a show.
And it's a band. Kiss is, it's, you're right. Kiss is more, they're more than a rock and roll band. They're someone like, if you haven't seen Kiss, you got to see them before you die. That's the type of band they are. Whether you like their style,
whether you like their music,
right?
Whether you like them or not, probably. Okay, I went to the Sphere the other night to see
you. Vegas. Yeah, yes, I haven't been there yet.
So I said I'm going to the Sphere to see you too, which wasn't the truth. I was going to the Sphere to see the Sphere. Okay, because I wanted to see the technology and how it adapts to music, and I just got a bonus because U2 was there. At least half the audience probably never saw U2. Okay, I've seen U2 maybe 12 times, and I really enjoy U2, but it's usually like a religious experience to go see U2. The people that come there are like kind in the mean, you know, they love you too. They know every word. They stand and they dance and they do, you know, they're immersed in it. I didn't see hardly anybody get up to do anything because they were here to see the Sphere like me. Okay. They maybe hadn't seen you too. So, I mean, it's great of what it was, but the Sphere is so overwhelming. But what I'm trying to say is half the people come to see the technology. They want to see what's new. Okay.
Right.
What you're going to do different.
So you're going to the Sphere, and it's like, it doesn't matter what show's going on. It's like, yeah. And I happened to catch so-and-so, whatever was happening that particular day at the Sphere. But I had to see this.
Yes, absolutely. So, that's the technology side that's moving our entertainment world.
As a ball player, you know, at a certain point, I did realize that I am an entertainer.
Yes, you are.
It's a different type of entertainment. But from 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock every night, I have my obligation is to go out there and give the fans a show. Now, I'm not thinking that way. I don't have to look a certain way or do a certain thing. I'm just playing. But that is my job. You've hung out with, obviously, in this industry your whole life, but you've been around a lot of athletes as well. What do we have in common, the two worlds, the athletic world, the rock and roll world? Is there any?
Absolutely. Number one, ego. Nobody has bigger egos than rock stars and ball players. Okay. And the reason why, they've been validated because 10, 15, 20,000 people a night stand up and go like this for you every day. So it's up to us whether you knew it or not. This is interesting you would say that. But you knew when you went out there what you did and how you acted that made your fans love you. Okay? You entertain them. You know, John Daly will hit a driver off the deck, 275 yards over the water. Why didn't he hit a 7-iron up and then because he's got the greatest wedge game of all times and hit it 4 feet from the pin and make the birdie? And his answer is because people don't come here to watch me hit a 7-iron. Okay. Right. They want to see me hit the fucking thing over the wall.
They want to see the tin cup.
That's it. So that's what we do as, and when you walk out, you can't explain, but you'll know what I'm talking about. When you walk out of that dugout and you grab that bat or going out on that field and these fucking people are there, you know what I mean? And they're screaming your name and you can't explain it.
You know, and you make a good point because you're making me think about that now. And you're right. It's like we are very aware of what we are doing, how we are moving, where we're facing. Now, you get caught up in the moment in baseball, a grinded out at bat. I'm not worried about where the camera is.
No.
But I'm well aware that once you play and establish yourself at that level, you are known for certain things.
Correct.
And you know when the fans come there, late in my career, when I hit a home run, I flip my bat. Okay, well, I was well aware of that. And I was well aware if I hit a home run and I didn't flip my bat, the fans then different now because the social media wasn't what it is now. But yeah. The question is, hey, you didn't flip your bat. You didn't think you hit it over the fence. No, I knew it was gone. I just didn't flip my bat. Well, why did you flip? You're right. By bringing that up, we are well aware of what we are known for. Absolutely. And if we can control it at all, we're going to give the fans what they came to see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, Taylor Swift, one of the biggest artists of all time forever. Mm-hmm. Probably due to social media that no other artist had at the height of their career. Okay. She knows exactly what she does when she walks out, turns her head, goes to the Super Bowl, where she stands, because she has to get, she knows they're watching her. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So she's right on. We all are on.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Some more than others, but the people that understand fans, that understand their fans, understand why the fans are there for them.
Right.
Okay. And they give it to them. Okay. And that's the important part.
You talked about this recent tour, 200 and how many?
87 shows.
287. Unbelievable. We play 162 games. It's rigorous. You know, we have 2 days off a month and it's every day.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You were talking about now how times have changed. I'm seeing it in the sports world. Times are changing. Players, they're more aware of nutrition and how year-round to live. And now we're getting to the point where all these young players, they have apps on their phones where they got to get X amount of hours of sleep. Today I woke up and my, you know, this isn't lining up with that. They have apps that tell them when they need a day off. There's things that they can read. Completely different world than when I was coming into the game, and completely different than when you started this game 35 years ago, 40 years ago, you've been doing this. Tell me, walk me through a day with a rock band on the road. I know as a baseball player, I'm sleeping in. I'm going to go to lunch. I'm going to get to the ballpark at 3. What's your normal day on tour with Kiss before we get ready for the show that night?
Okay. We meet in the lobby at 1 o'clock. Okay. Usually I'm up in the mornings, calls to Europe, and do all my stuff. Okay. Yeah. We meet in the lobby at 1 o'clock. We all get in cars, go to the airport. We get on our jet. Okay. We have a G5. We get on the jet. We take off for the next city. Okay. We have a lunch on the plane with our flight attendant and stuff. We land. We go right straight to the gig. 4:30 we do. We have a meeting in a place called Italy, which is where we eat in Italy. And we have a meeting there about the show, about what happened last night. How can we change this? We have the crew come in, work on that. Then we go and do a meet and greet for 250, 300 people. And they go out and they play 5 songs, acoustically or electrically, however they feel. And then they do a Q&A for those fans. Okay? And they talk. This takes about an hour. Then they come back in, get a little bite to eat, and they go do makeup. Then we do the show, jump in the cars after the show and head to the hotel, and the next day we do the same thing.
On to the next. And
it's Groundhog Day, like you have.
But so it's like...
Okay, here's the difference, what you're talking about, Booney.
All right.
Okay. I agree that the new athlete, the guy that's aware of what 174 grams of sugar is and all that kind of shit. We knew what blow was. We had no idea how many grams were in sugar, what we ate or whatever the fuck that was. Okay. We didn't know that, but you know what we had? What I believe that was lost. We don't have any fucking stars. Okay. We don't have people we don't have a Boone in baseball. We don't have a Chichi Rodriguez in golf. We don't have a John Daly anymore in golf. We have these fucking super robot kids that are like the Stepford Wives. They all swing the club the same way. If you listen to the interview, it could be any one of them giving the same interview, okay? The personality, what Jack and Arnie had, what Mickelson and Tiger had, you know what I mean? What John Daly, the two people that brought the most to the game of golf was Tiger Woods and John Daly. Two different ways. Great role model, unbelievable golfer, won 25% of the time. And John Daly, that says stuff like, John, he just stayed at my house last week. John, so how's your cancer? You know something, Doc? I think the cigarettes and vodka have killed it. Okay.
That's so, something he would say.
That's John Daly. Okay.
Yeah.
So when I see, yeah, could they be better golfers than what the Chichi Rodriguez was and Lee Trevino and Gary Player and Nicholas and all the great golfers, the Hogans and the things that they did, the antics they did and all that stuff. Maybe they're better golfers, but they're not entertainers. Okay.
Right.
You need to have the Dennis Rodmans of the world. You need to have the Brett Boones of the world. You need to have the fucking classic stars that, no, not apologetic for what they do. They go kick ass. Mike Tyson. Okay. You know what I mean? Yeah. So to me, those are the people that go fishing in deep water for where they're at in life. They're not focused on how they can get the stretch to get this underneath. So they get, so Brady goes and they teach him how to just, he doesn't go to the gym for the last 10 years. They go, have you ever heard about muscle entanglement?
No, but I know he's doing something weird.
So what it is, he gets to throw and he only works the muscles that throws the football. He does it. If he works on anything else, it will entangle those muscles to where he can't throw the football as well. So he only does the exercises for throwing the football. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay. And you can be the greatest athlete in the world. Okay. I mean, you can be the best of the best of what you want to be, but you have to be, to me, you have to be a personality.
You got to have that it factor to go along with the talent.
You have to have the X factor.
Right.
And that's what we're not teaching. We're not teaching that in people in the sense of, you know, of teaching our kids to have character, you know, to have character, believe in what you're doing, work your ass off, but have that fun, have things that you, you know, that you're going for. And it's not like you go, well, he couldn't lay it up, but he tried to hit the 5 wood out of, but what would Tiger do? Tiger Woods, when he was at the height, I saw him at Firestone, and I think it was Ernie Els was standing, they were tied, and he's in a sand trap 200 and some yards away. He took a 5 wood and cut it 75 yards, 8 feet from the pin. Now, nobody would do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
But Tiger had the ability to do it. And that's what he did. And that's why the guy's so great. You know what I mean? But you just have to be that something special. And if you're that something special and you connect to people, you keep that connection. That's all. It's not that hard. But I don't like, get back to your question. I like the fact that they're better athletes or better golfers. They still shoot the same numbers.
Yeah.
Nobody shoots 40. No. Yeah. I mean,
right. And the ball changes and the equipment changes. So they lengthen the course and better conditions to play in. You know, you look at those. I mean, if we just focus on golf, you look at those old films and it's like they're putting on like there's pebbles all over the green. You go on a PGA Tour green now, it's like beyond perfect. So conditions are much better. Equipment is much more efficient.
Sure.
You know, guys hit it a lot longer. They're more athletic. The courses are longer than they used to be to make it all relevant.
Yes. I mean, John Daly told me last week that he believes that he could take a piece of oak, and make a driver that he can hit further than he can with all the technology.
The current stuff, yeah. The old ping woods.
Yeah, but that's what he, you know, but again, I think that no matter what you're talking about, we're in the entertainment business. Whether you're in football, baseball, hockey, we're in the entertainment business. We're entertainers. That's what we do. People come to watch us. And like I tell my bands, if you're the fucking best, if you're the most exciting band anybody's ever seen, they will come and see you. And if you're not, they will go see the fucking most exciting band. Okay. No, they'll come and see you.
I think this is fascinating to me though. And you say, okay, we pull up, we've got our meeting at 1 o'clock. We do this, we go over last night's show.
Yeah.
As an athlete, you know, there's times where I'm swinging the crap out of it. And there's times where, man, I'm not seeing it at all. And I got to put in cage work and, man, I'm in a slump. Yeah. I go to a certain venue, you know, being in New York at Yankee Stadium in the postseason, there's nothing like it. Being in Detroit in April where it's windy and cold and there's 10,000 people in the stands, different atmosphere for you in the rock and roll side. Do these guys know, do they get in slumps? Do they sit down at that meeting the next day and go, man, we were horseshit last night and we need to get better. You were this, you were that. not necessarily pointing fingers, but just acknowledging that,
they have to point fingers so they don't feel so shitty about what they did. that's how it works. And it's healthy for us. For me, the biggest thing I can do is empower people to be better at what they do. I can't tell them. I have to show them. And I show them by let them watch sections of the show that they thought was cool, that wasn't cool. When you get people excited about what they do, they want to kill. You want to kill for your fans. You want to go and when you say in a slump, I've heard they go, I hate playing outdoors. Well, get over it. You're going to be fucking playing outdoors.
Okay. Yeah, that's one of the venues we're going.
Well, my voice isn't this way. Talk yourself into whatever you want to. You're going out there tonight. Okay. And you're going to have to kick ass. And you're going to have to grab every bit of your ball sack to get it done, but you're going to go do it. Okay. And we're going to be there. And we're all going to be there beating you down that fucking road because that's what our job is. We don't have plan B.
If Doc McGee goes to my baseball game and I go 3-for-4, we win 7-2. I hit a 3-run homer. I turned a big double play. I'm going to see you after the game and go, Booney, hell of a game. On the flip side, if I strike out 3 times, go 0-for-4, we lose. I make a key error. Doc, after the game, Booney, rough one tonight. It's obvious that it was rough or great. Now, we go to a concert, and of course, you're going to see things that I don't see at a rock and roll concert.
You see things at a ballpark that we don't see.
Right, but it's more black and white. It's like obvious that I struck out with the bases loaded in the ninth, and I'm the GOAT tonight, or GOAT in a bad way, not the greatest of all time, and everybody knows it. Whereas for somebody in a band, they could be having an off night. You know they're not good tonight because you see them when they're good. But the average fan, are they going to be able to catch that?
No. No, they won't. Okay. And in which, to your point, yours is a given because it's out in the open. You're naked. You're standing out there. You struck out. Okay. Right. If they hit the wrong chord, somebody goes, oh, what's that? You know what I mean? It's no big deal. And you wouldn't say to you, I would not say you had a rough one tonight.
Won't say anything.
No. What I probably do is wait. And I know what I do is I come in and sit down with your room and say, is there anything going on with you? You got some problems, you got some issues, and start working on why. Because it's not like you to have this slump. There's something else going on.
Right.
Okay. And to attack that side of it, I do it with the bands. You know, man, when they're, you know, they call up and their wives give them shit or whatever, you know what I mean? And then their kids are, something happened at home, and now they come out and it's like they've got to take pictures and they go, fuck this, I'm not taking, you know what I mean?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
We always have a saying that, hey, And in Paul's dressing room and everything else, he has a picture of George, this trainer, right? And George Francis, who trained Bogabi and Bruno and all the Black Fighters out of England. And his thing was, you know, you leave what happened to you here and you take it all to the ring. You leave everything in the fucking ring. And he keeps that picture up there to remind him that regardless of what he's got on his mind, he's got to fucking let it go and get it and go do what he has to do. And most of the time that works if you can get it. But so again, good coaching is probably the most important part of the game. You can have 4 or 5 superstars, okay, on your team, but if they're not playing well together, it doesn't matter. So when you get a Sabian as a coach or Halas or Landry or Parcells or something, you know what I mean? Something like that, that build these dynasties that you don't know why. It's because of coaching. Because they know how to get the best out of you. And you've had them. You've had coaches, you might not know it.
Right.
But you've had coaches that somehow drag your ass up. What you, like you said, you get 2 days off a month. Can this be the most fun for the other 28 days? Okay. No, it's not. But if you're not prepared and they don't get you emotionally connected, okay, and understanding that when you walk in, this is where you're at and your mindset and you move into it, then you're in trouble. You need to have those connections. And when they're not, they pull you out of the game.
Right.
They go,
the greatest managers I've ever had, that are the greatest people.
Yeah.
It's about managing people. It's about managing egos. It's about I've got to come at him differently than I've got to come at him. And if I do, I know his personality versus his personality. This approach won't work with him, but it'll work with him to get the same result. Now, you've been working with KISS forever, but you've worked with so many other bands. Yeah. What is the toughest? What is your toughest job? And I'm not talking about with guys you've been with forever, because you know each other so well. I'm talking about just in general through the years. What has been your biggest hurdle?
I think the biggest hurdle is for people to understand where they sit in the food chain. Okay. And why people are talking to them, or I'm talking to them the way that I talk to them. Okay. In the sense of them, they think that they're so much bigger than where they're at. They're MacGyvers. Okay. You know, you can go, I had a client, I won't mention the name, a big client. You'd say, hey, this is a paperclip. And he'd go, no, it's a nuclear weapon. I can make a nuclear weapon out of it. You know what I mean? He'd go, no, it's a fucking paperclip. Okay. But so you have these personalities, and a lot of them have this failure mechanism. Okay, that especially in the music side of it, and young kids in the music side of it, it's, they kind of all look towards the 27 Club as their savior. I can be popular for a while and then I'll die in a drug overdose at 27 and I'm a legend. I'm Janis Joplin or something, you know?
Right.
And those type of things, it's kind of, you know, I build pathfinding. Okay, that's what I do. I find somebody's path and I work with them on their path and focus on where they're going down the road. We're focusing on what they do and not what everybody else does and not what everybody's told them. So that's the hardest kind of thing. I mean, when I'm with James Brown, I'm 27 years old managing James Brown. I don't know if I managed him or he managed me. Okay, because these are part of how I learned to become, I guess, a good manager or a big manager, because I couldn't talk like this to James. Now I could. Okay.
Right.
And it may have saved James an awful lot of time if I'd have been better at what I did at that time. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. So
those are the hardest things for me, is to not be the enabler. Okay. And be the positive push, but also have a connection with them. You know what I mean? To where I'm not just riding them. I'm walking, I'm on the road with them. I'm on their path with them. And so that connection of the two of you has to be that way. And I don't get that with everybody. And when I don't agree with some people, and I have a theory, when the cat shit gets bigger than the cat, I get rid of the cat. Okay.
No, it makes sense. I know exactly what you're saying. It was interesting. I was watching this show the other day. It's called The Offer. It's on, I don't know, it's on Paramount.
Leslie Greif produced it.
Did you see it?
Oh, yeah. He's a very good friend of mine.
Fascinating to me.
He just did the Kiss thing. He just did the Kiss.
Oh, okay.
Madison Square Garden. So,
but I watched behind the scenes, Godfather, arguably, whether you think it is or not, it's arguably one of the greatest movies of all time. And I never thought about how it got made. And then all of a sudden I watched I just finished it up the other night and I knew you were coming on the show. I said, that guy's kind of got to be like Doc McGee, the producer. It's like, okay, I've got to be the guy that gets the director, the mafia boss, Paramount Pictures. All we got to put out all these fires and get all these guys to the finish line to make my movie and make it successful. And I had kind of a new respect for how tough that was to make, being the producer, how level-minded you needed to be, how unemotional you needed to be no matter what happened, because so many things came up, and I'm like, I didn't even think about that. Mafia is threatening you not to make the movie. You've got to make it, but you've got to go to this dinner, and you're caught in a picture, and your Paramount guys are getting on you. It was really interesting to me, and I thought of you because this show was coming up, and I thought, I wonder if that's how you went about your business. It's like, my job is to get that member of the band, that guy, that venue member, and we all got to find a way, because it's all about putting on a great show.
Correct. And that is the hardest thing. It's really, I don't know how to say it, because it's not, really not that hard for me, because that's what I do. Okay. And it's not a fluff way to do it, where when somebody gets angry and, you know, I don't go, oh yes, that's right, you did it, you know, no. But I don't scream at him, you know what I mean? So I don't know how to explain it. It's easier for me because they'll listen to me. And I don't talk that much. I listen to them. They talk themselves into what they want to do.
You convinced them it was their idea.
I lead them down that road to where they want to go. Like I said, we're dealing with you guys, okay? Sports guys, rock stars. We're all on the spectrum, okay?
We're all a little off.
No. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this shit. Yeah. Okay, we don't focus on the middle. Okay, you, me, all of us, depending upon who we are, we start going way out. So that's why we fish in deep water. We're out there thinking of crazy shit to do. Okay, and that's the entertaining part of it.
Speaking of movies. Baseball, I don't know if you're like me when it comes to rock and roll pictures, but baseball movies, for some reason, if one comes out, I'm hypercritical. You know, it's like, come on, that's not realistic. That's bullshit. I watch Bull Durham. You know what? Bull Durham does a pretty good job. That's kind of how it is in the minor leagues. It really is. Yeah. You know, there's a few things that, no, because most baseball, and I say this all the time, most baseball movies in Hollywood, it's like, well, just put tobacco in everybody's mouth, have them spit really awkwardly on camera, because that's what ballplayers do, and it drives me crazy. So football movies, not so much, because I'm not a football player. Yeah. Right. Rock and roll, I'm not a musician. So, hey, I always think like everybody else. Is that the way it really is? Okay, I got a couple movies for you. Yeah. Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg. You remember that?
Yes.
And That Thing You Do, I think, with Tom Hanks.
Yes.
Is Your World, is that semi-realistic, those two movies?
Yes, because they followed the theme. Okay, but how they were pulled off. Well, you have to remember all the movies. Those movies, The Dirt, the Queen Dirt movie.
Yeah, I saw that, the Motley Crue one.
Yeah, the Motley Crue movie. And people ask me, they go, did that really happen? And I go, yeah, but it may happen differently. Okay. Right. The timelines that they showed in the movie were off. But guess what? This isn't the Kennedy assassination. This is a rock film. Okay.
Right.
So it's an entertaining film. But I don't have a tattoo that says entertainment or die on my arm that was in the movie, right? That I supposedly had. Okay. And, but the essence of the films were pretty true to what it is. You know, the Elvis film that came out was pretty accurate when it came to that. Some of the things that, you know, again, timelines are different, but they're making a movie. Some of the stuff is embellished or moved on to make it better for the movie, but it could have happened to any one of them, especially my artists at the time.
Kiss, they've been together so long, the key players.
Yeah.
What's the key to them staying together, being this successful for this long? And in your world, do you have to like each other in a band to be successful?
Okay, first of all, you don't have to like each other to be successful. But what you have to do is you have to appreciate what the other person brings to the game. Okay? So if just because people say, oh, you have the lead singer syndrome, where you're not going to do it and you're the prima donna and everybody's up your ass, okay? It's just where it all goes to at the end of the day. But, I mean, you have to, it's hard to say. I actually just lost my train of thought on this. Because I was thinking of Gene and Paul. You don't have to like each other, although they respect each other tremendously. You know, Paul Stanley told me one time, he said, you know, Gene said after Wicked Lester, before Kiss started, he said, well, I'm out of here. I'm going to go start another band. And Paul and him were very, very against each other. From songwriting, they really didn't like each other. And Gene was leaving. And Paul said, well, I'm going too. Because he felt that strong of a connection between him and Gene musically, and going to find something great. And they were in their 20s. Okay, so yeah, you don't have to, but I think you have to respect the people. You have to work with them too. You know what I mean? You have to be responsible for them as well. You can't just leave it to the manager or somebody else. We sit down and we have people, they talk to each other all the time about issues that they're having with each other. You know, and I won't even be in the room. I'm gone. You know what I mean? Because people just have to talk the shit out. But, you know, if you don't, it gets really nasty. And that's what you see in these bands. You think Keith Richards and Mick out together?
I couldn't imagine.
No. But they certainly respect what each other does for the brand of the Rolling Stones.
Right. No, yeah. And it's similar in sports. I mean, I've been on some teams where, I'll tell you what, I like the majority of my teammates. I really do. And then I've been on teams where, once work's over, I want to pick my own friends and go home. And yeah, I got a few buddies here and there, but it's very easy to separate, especially as an athlete. We have such a small time frame, such a window to try to win that you really have to take it and be very professional about it. It's like, all right, I'm on this team. I can only control what I can control. And from 7 to 10 every night, I have a job to do. And I've got some guys that, well, maybe I don't care for him that much, but I'll tell you what, he's a really good player and I respect him as a player. So I'll go to battle with him for 3 hours every night. And then I pick my friends and I can go home. So I would assume it's got to be that way, especially the successful bands, because I'm sure it's not all peaches and cream going on the road with these guys for years and years. They probably want to knock each other out on several occasions.
75% of all the marriages end in divorces. Why? How can a rock band, you got f- five idiots that got together in their teens to try to get laid, okay, yep. to get a rock band. And you expect them for 50 years to be on the road and in the trenches with each other for 50 years, and you're not going to have arguments and fights and everything else? No, it's going to happen. And the strong ones like Mick and Keith got through it, okay? And Gilmore and Roger Waters hasn't gotten through it, okay? And, you know, and Page and Plant haven't gotten through it. Right. And there's a lot of people that haven't gotten through it, okay? And just don't want to be around people. And I never understood that. And Gene and Paul, Gene have no idea what you're talking about. If he thought he was going to lose $1.50 because he said something about something else, he'd be, well, what are you talking about? I get paid for it. But Paul's the emotional one, but Paul understands that when we got Tommy and Eric, right? These guys allowed Gene and Paul to be rock stars because they played so well. So when they had the backbone that they didn't have to worry about, because Paul likes to put the guitar between his legs and over his head, he's the ringleader, right? Well, it's not always going to sound great. So if Tommy and Eric are fucking solid, Gene and Paul can work. When we had Ace and Peter, God bless them, and they're talented in their own way early on, but they weren't the backbone. And these guys couldn't do it. And we spent 6-7 years with some pretty awful sounding shows. Okay.
I think I saw a clip of you and you were talking about, and I started cracking up because everything I've heard about Gene came to fruition in one interview. You said he called me, and I think you were talking about Gene. He said he called me in the middle of the night. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing up? Well, you know, Doc, I'm working all the time. And you said something to the effect of, he's just up because he wants to be Gene.
That's
the next morning. He just can't wait to be Gene, the rock star, walk around town. So he's getting up early.
That's what he does. Yeah, he just can't wait to hear himself talk. And he's great at it. He's the best at it. He's got a great work ethic. He quit school because there was recess. I mean, he's a great partner. Him and Paul have been great partners. The only band, I mean, I've always gone on the road with my bands, okay? But, you know, I had so many bands, I was just out all the time, but I didn't see all the shows. Kiss, I probably... And that was part of the design of the team of me and Gene and Paul, was that I was there at every show. And what that gave them were Tommy and Eric had that backbone of music that then they could go and be the entertainers, okay? All the decision-making I could do. And that way they didn't have to be consumed about pyro, this, who's doing this? The wardrobe girl fucked up here. You know what I mean?
Right.
The caterer brought in shitty food, whatever, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, I could be there to kind of buffer that. So that's basically the same thing.
All right. A few more before I let you go. I'm going to go on a quick rapid fire, just with some bands that I loved growing up that you managed, and just give me a little, I don't know, give me a little dissertation of each one. Couple sentences, what comes to mind. Well, the first one early was Motley Crue.
They were more of a gang than a band, basically.
Bon Jovi.
One of the hardest working guys in the business. Not the most talented, but certainly the most driven.
Guns N' Roses.
Of an unbelievable first record and disaster after that.
Hootie and the Blowfish.
One of my favorite people to be around. Darius Rucker is one of my favorite people to be around.
The last, you're the longest standing, Kiss in a nutshell.
I'd say driven. Both of them are just completely driven for perfection. I don't know what else to say about them. They're great partners. They're just great work ethic and very smart.
Well, Doc, this has been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on and giving me a little insight, because I'm a big fan of rock and roll, but I like getting behind the curtain a little bit on something I'm not a professional at. It's like, you know.
But you're around all the rock stars. You've been around all the rock stars your whole life.
Yeah, we're just baseball players, though, you know. Rock stars, they don't want to ever change professions. We always want to be them, but the rock star always stays. The actors always want to be athletes, but the rock stars never. They want to stay where they're at.
But nobody goes to the gym. See, no. My guys, you don't see them going, well, I just worked out, you know, said, you know, that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
You know. They don't do anything like that. So,
well, Doc, it was a pleasure, man. It was good catching up with you. I appreciate you coming on the Boone Podcast. For everybody listening or watching the Brett Boone Podcast, I appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you next time. Thanks, Doc.
Thanks, Brett.